This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
We will start with a nice word in Parshas Emor. The Rusha Besumim, he brings a medrash on Emor of the Kahana B'nai Aharon. He said, Hashem showed Moshe Rabbeini Dor Dor V'Dorshov. Showing Moshe Rabbeini all the doors, how it's going to look. He says, Dor Dor Imaluchov, Dor Dor V'Chachomov, Manhigov. Hashem showed Moshe Rabbeini what it's going to look like in all generations, who's going to lead each generation, who's going to be the Chachmei Ador, the kings of the generation, the Manhigim. And then the Medrash adds, Dor Dor V'Chomsov, Dor Dor V'Gazlunov. Hashem showed him, you see every generation, look, you see all the people that are stealing, the robbers, the criminals. So he says, what's pshat in this Medrash? My Hashem wanted to show him Dor V'Dor V'Dor, should we understand? The Manhig Ador, the Chachmei Ador, that's what's important to see. Maybe the Moshe Rabbeini should feel that he has who to give it over to. But why is Hashem showing him the criminals and the bad people of each generation? He says something very interesting. He says that the Chachmei Ador and the later Doiras, the Manhig Ador, they don't give the Misr the way they used to. They're not telling people what they shouldn't do. They're not giving that kind of Techucha the way the Nevi'im did and the way the early Manhigim did. The Ramu and Chash Mishpat and Simin Yid Baiz says that you don't have to rebuke someone if you're afraid that he might go tell out the authorities on you. We're living in new times. You do something to someone, you say something they don't like, and they go report you. Oh, if that's the case, you don't have to. That's the Ramu and Shulchan Aruch. In other words, even though technically it would be a chiyuv, you'd be obligated to tell him he's doing the wrong thing, but if he's going to go and master on you, you don't have to. So, Moshe Rabbeini, we know all the Chachmei Ador, all the nitzitz of Moshe Rabbeini, they were all included in Moshe Rabbeini's nefesh, and Moshe Rabbeini was seeing what's happening throughout the doiras. And Hashem is showing him, Dor Dor V'Dorshav, Dor Dor Manhigav, look, you see all these Chachmei Ador, they're all part of you. Now, if you're going to start wondering why later on you'll notice that these Manhigim and the Chachmei Ador aren't being Moichiach, the Dor, the way you would want them to, the way you would think they should, I'll show you, look at the criminals, look at the people stealing, look at the people doing bad things, and you'll understand why they can't say what they have to say. Because not always could you say what you have to say. So even though you, Moshe Rabbeini, are saying it the way you should say it, and that's how you think it's supposed to be done, you'll see what they're dealing with later on, and you'll notice that they're not able to. Now, this idea of, the mitzvah of not saying what's not going to be heard, not going to be said, it's just so important to always understand and be able to guess and figure out what a person's tolerance level is, what they could handle. Before you tell your husband something, or your wife something, or your child something, could he handle this or not? Now, most of us have enough experience to know that by now. If it's the first time, okay, you can still make a mistake the second time. But after a couple of times, it's important to know that people that can't be told everything. You have to be careful what you tell them. Whether it's because they don't tolerate it, or because they can't understand it, or because for whatever reason they're seeing a different picture in their head, and based on their narrative, you're not making sense. It doesn't matter what it is. But sometimes it can be so simple to you. And it's so obvious that this should be said, or that it doesn't even have to be said. And to someone else, it's not that obvious, and they can't hear it. And Moshe Rabbeini understood that at some point, not everything could be said. And I think this is a very big lesson in Shulchan Bayis and in Chinuch and everything else. Let me read a question, and we'll try to give some clarity. Let's see how the Shmaya. Dear Rabbi Gruen, I listen to your shiurim every week and enjoy them immensely. Thank you. I'd like to ask you a question, and I feel you are qualified to answer. Okay, thank you for that too. We have a 12.5-year-old son, a very sweet, edel, good, smart boy, Baruch Hashem. He's extremely sensitive and has lots of social anxiety. His social anxiety is holding him back from going to shul on Shabbos and lots of other things. His extreme sensitivity is holding him back from going to cheder, as he hates cheder, hates his Rebbe, and is miserable there. I explained to his Rebbe that he's very sensitive and needs to be treated very gently, and he can't tolerate criticism or pressure. The Rebbe's trying. He's being very nice and tries to accommodate his needs, but it's not enough. The Rebbe feels like he's doing everything he can. He said he listens to your shiurim about sensitive kids, and he's doing the best he can, but he's not a psychologist. The Rebbe feels we coddle him too much, and he needs to learn to manage in the real world. Right now, he is not going to cheder, as he really needed a break. He says things like, why should I wake up in the morning to go to a place where I'm miserable? Or, I don't have a purpose, I don't have a goal. Every day is the same torture like the day before. Even his bar mitzvah coming up in a few weeks isn't enough to lift him and excite him. I understand that he needs constant gifts and trips and exciting events to keep him going. What's your suggestion on how to help him for now and for the future? I'd appreciate a prompt response, as this is time sensitive. Thank you. Okay, so yeah, the first thing I want to say is that I feel bad that I can't give a prompt response, but whenever it is, that's when it is. So let's just start with this. I've spoken many times about sensitive children, right? And I wrote a book about it. And like you said, you heard me talk about this in the past. I say, I don't know if what you're describing here is what's called normal or extreme. I don't know. It's very hard to address. There are extreme situations, which are not the normal situations, where things are out of bounds and not the typical. And typical normal intervention and normal measures don't work for not typical situations very often. So I don't know. There are extraordinary situations that call for extraordinary measures. There is such a thing. And then there are the normal situations, which sometimes people get very exasperated about and very frustrated over, and really it's all normal. And it's so important not to confuse the two. And I want to be honest that I don't know from reading this letter what you're really dealing with. Sometimes you have parents who are dealing with a typical toddler tantrum, and they think there's something wrong with their kid, and they go crazy and start going to psychologists, and from there on it's just like a never-ending cycle of looking for professional help to deal with this crazy kid. And then you have those that are really dealing with something unreasonable, and they're like, no, it's normal, he's always been like this, it runs in the family. And when you're hearing it, like, seriously, is that, you know, is this what you consider normal? So everything definitely has to be taken seriously and responsibly. Now, I'm not saying that you have to run to professionals or not. I am saying that somebody who is a little more aware, and maybe a professional, maybe not considered a professional, might be able to give you the clarity that you need to know what really has to be done. There are situations where somebody would need medication or other kind of help, and then there are situations, very many situations, that don't need that at all. And when the wrong advice or the wrong ideas are applied to the wrong situations, it's a shame. So that's why I'm just saying this, I don't know, by means of introduction, but it would be irresponsible for me to figure out on my own, you know, is this really just a typical thing where I'm going to teach you or try to give you more clarity about how to deal with a sensitive child going through such a situation, or is this not the typical and go help your son because he's really struggling. So that's very important. Now, I don't know if he's open to talking to somebody, if he is talking to somebody, if somebody could help him or not. Very often, that might just be the best thing for him to do. Have somebody he trusts in, he could confide in, he could be open to, somebody who could understand him, somebody who could give him the right feeling and then be able to slowly guide him in the right direction and give him the clarity and the skills that he needs. You know, very often, that would be best. It is common for parents not to be the ones that are able to do that with a child. I don't know if it's unfortunate or sadly, but that's just how it is sometimes. We get too emotionally involved, we get too personal, both too personal to see a situation objectively, both too personal to be able to say things that a child should be able to accept, and you know, this is all normal. So if at 12 years old, you have the right person that could connect with your son, figure out what's really going on and guide him, that's often the right thing to do. And like I said, sometimes you want to find out if this is, you know, something that needs a little more professional help or not. I think what's important to understand, though, is that even if what you are dealing with is true anxiety and true mental health issues, let's say, sometimes, there's still almost always the element of sensitivity that has to be addressed. Which means I've seen situations where I wouldn't deny that they're not the typical or the norm, and I wouldn't resist getting professional and medical help even. But to rely on that and not address the fact that even the boy who's struggling with a real mental condition, right, or girl or anyone, or adult, there's still the hypersensitivity involved that's often unaddressed. And this is where it's sad when people get excited over a diagnosis sometimes, where, oh, so he has this problem, okay, so he's seeing a psychologist, he's going to a psychiatrist, and we're good, oh, he tantrums at home, yeah, because he's autistic, he's dealing with this and this problem, yeah, because he's dyslexic, he's dealing with this issue because, so we got names, and we're happy with the diagnosis because it somewhat absolves us of feeling guilty or responsible for the problem now that he has a condition, and he's going to people that are helping him with it. So often, if not always, even children that are dealing with real issues of anxiety or other things that they can't overcome on their own and they do need professional help and real intervention for, there's still so much about the sensitivity involved. In other words, it could be it's only 50% of the problem, but it's almost always there. There's almost always so much of it that could be helped by understanding and dealing properly with the hypersensitivity that a child is dealing with. So as you mentioned, you're dealing with a sensitive child. Like I said, I don't know if that's all it is, but I still do believe that it's a big part of it. With that said, let me just give some ideas. If a boy is coming home from cheder or depressed, not wanting to get up in the morning, and I go and no goals, no excitement, no bar mitzvah, no anything, it sounds a bit extreme. I'll be honest with you. I don't know how long he's not going to cheder. What this break really means, I didn't get clarity on that. But it's important for him to see that his parents understand his feelings. That's always the first thing. Real validation, real understanding. So often, because we don't like the choice that a child is making, whether it's staying home or being negative or staying in bed or whatever, so we're inclined to right away contradict the story, because if I agree with your narrative, then you're right. There's no reason to go to cheder. And if I agree with your feelings, then there's no reason to get out of bed. So I have to tell you that it's wrong. There's no reason to look at the cheder like that. Nobody's doing anything to you. It's not true. And that's where people make a big mistake. When you're dealing with somebody who's very sensitive, whether it's a child or an adult, it's important to be able to validate, understand, and accept their feelings. It doesn't obligate you now to agree with everything they decide to do because of it. It doesn't obligate you to now be codependent and solve all their problems. It just means that I understand you. I don't even necessarily agree with you, but I really understand you. I'm ready to hear it. Wow. I can validate, I can empathize. If you're not the one that could do that, then you didn't even get to the playing field yet. This boy is not connecting with someone who's contradicting his story. He's not connecting with somebody who doesn't understand what he's going through, or at least ready to hear it and believe in it somewhat. I think that's very important. Very important. You don't necessarily have to promote this narrative, but you do have to understand it. There are parents that are afraid that agreeing with it means that they're promoting whatever the child is doing. Or those that even feel like, yeah, you know what, I'll be on your team and I'll agree with you that your Rebbe's crazy and the school is crazy and your friends are no good. Like this, you know, we're connecting. Obviously, it's also no good. It's also no good. You're enabling a problem and you're instigating a problem. You're making it even worse. And you're challenging the authority and the whole everything. It's not good. But you want to be on his page. You want him to see that his parents are the ones that understand what he's going through. They feel for him. I think that's the first thing. And, you know, if you miss this part, then very often that's just what's keeping him stuck. How can he leave go of a narrative that nobody's believing in? He has to stick up for it with all his might. He can't leave go. How can he connect with the people who are trying to help him if they're not trying to help him in his mind? That's very important. Now, after hearing someone out and after really validating and understanding them well, of course you want to go to some kind of solution mode. First of all, don't go there too quickly. Don't go there too quickly. If you're listening to them just to be able to throw a solution or suggestion in the same conversation or mid-sentence, then often, you know, that's also just making it clear that you don't really care about me. You just want me to back in cheder. Sometimes it's an hour later. Sometimes it's when he finishes talking. Sometimes it's a day later. But the person who really does understand him, who he feels understands him, is the one who is already in the right zone of saying, so what can we do about this? I feel for you. I want to help you. It's important to throw certain open-ended suggestions so that you're showing that you really care and you're trying to come up with something, but not that you take it upon yourself to solve the problem. Very often we make that mistake, you know. So I don't want to go to cheder because the people on the boys on the bus, they so I'll take you with the car. No, I'm embarrassed to go with the car. So what do we do? I don't know. So maybe I'll walk with you. No, I don't want to walk with you. It's too cold. The more you show that you're trying to come up with the right solution, very often the more someone sees, oh, so you're going to come up with this. Okay, so I'll refute everything you're coming up with because Deval, you know, for the meantime, I don't like what you're suggesting anyway. I see you're taking it upon yourself. That's what codependency is. You're responsible to fix my problems, so go fix them. And until I want the problem to go away, or until I really like the solution that you're offering, I'll just keep on saying no. It's important to offer help and tell someone, listen, I'm here for you. Maybe we can come up with something. If we can come up with something reasonable, no commitment. If we come up with something reasonable, I'll try to help you. Well, nothing's reasonable. Well, I don't know. Maybe something about... maybe there's someone to talk to. I don't know who. Open-ended. No, I'll call them a now. Maybe we could talk to someone. Maybe somebody could do it at home differently. Maybe we could think about it. Maybe we could have a meeting tomorrow about it again. Maybe we could talk to Bobby, to Zaidi, to the neighbor. I don't know. Sometimes just leaving it open, showing that you care, and offering to help if something reasonable comes up, that alone is enough to give a boy a good feeling and to try to be creative and help himself. So that's also important. Now, I understand you spoke to the Rebbe already, who's trying his best to make this boy feel good. The Rebbe's not a psychologist. It's true. He might be creative and capable, and he might not. We're all limited, you know, but he's definitely not a psychologist. He's not a therapist. And you're not either. And I don't think you have to be too self-critical if you can't outmaneuver and outsmart you know, every complaint that a boy like this is coming up with. And you don't have to be too self-critical about it, but we keep on trying. We keep on trying. One of the things you could do just talking about the Rebbe for a minute, is to bring good regards from the Rebbe. Very often, as much as the Rebbe is trying to make a boy feel good, he might not have the tact or know how to do it, and the boy might not believe it. He might be skeptical, like a lot of sensitive boys. He's only saying it because he wants me to learn. But if you say, you know, your Rebbe told me such good regards, or bring back something more substantial, even if the Rebbe didn't say it, or the Rebbe told Zaidi when he met him in shul nice regards about you and things like that, you know, slowly, you might be the one that could help him believe that his Rebbe is meaning what he's telling him. So that's also just and that's a good tip for many people out there, whenever a kid's having an issue with a Rebbe or a teacher or anyone. You mentioned something about constant gifts and trips and excitement and things like that. I don't think it's so practical. I'm not sure what you mean by constant gifts and trips, right? Was that actually the words you wrote? Yeah, it was. Constant gifts and trips and exciting events to keep them going. I mean, of course, once in a while, and maybe even more than once in a while, has to be applied in every situation when it's necessary. But, you know, to keep on having a kid run on that kind of excitement and to make him think that that's what's normal, you know, to keep on bringing life into him, is probably overdoing it, I would think. You know, to think that everything goes, we're gonna fly to Florida one day, and next day we're gonna do this, and the third day we're gonna buy a goat, and the fourth, you know, people have to be reasonable. Sometimes just giving into all these demands is part of what's making them stuck in this problem. And in general, feeding and enabling into these issues and just dancing around somebody who's struggling because we're afraid to upset him or afraid to deal with just recently I was talking to parents who were dancing around the kids' demands like to a crazy level, either because they were afraid of what would happen if they didn't, or because they wanted to make him happy. And you know, obviously if this is going on for a while, you can only imagine it's happening because you're actually giving into it and feeding it. So I think that's also something to be careful with. Of course, even while such a problem is going on, I think you definitely want to give the constant love and the good feeling. Very often, during a problem, you don't notice what it's accomplishing. He's not going to school, he's depressed, he's not excited for his bar mitzvah, you know, so it's not accomplishing anything now. We don't know what's going to happen when. But those who stay really connected and express unconditional love, maybe not trips and gifts, but unconditional love, the care, the smile, whatever you do, you don't know where it will take effect. You don't want your child to come out 4 years later and say, you know, I was going through this, my parents didn't know what to do about it, and they just gave up or whatever. So sometimes, you know, there's the big picture that has to be taken into account, and all the feelings that you're expressing, which aren't you know, showing any results now, but they're all very important. I understand that the exciting, constant gifts and trips might be a little more noticeable in the outcome, but there's the underlying of really caring and showing it that makes a bigger difference. Now, I don't know if anything I said yet is answering the situation, but let me talk a minute about the part that he's not going to cheder. I understand you said that he's taking a break now, a needed break. You know, there's such a thing. There are many parents who feel like every once in a while a kid needs a day off or even a week off, or, you know, situations happen. It's not terrible. Not terrible. Very often it would be helpful to children if only it was done responsibly, which means we spoke about it, we decided when we're going to take off. It wasn't just this obnoxious resistance. I'm not going today, I'm in a bad mood, I woke up late, I missed the bus. But, you know, if you feel a child needs a day off and you speak about it and you make up when or what, and maybe you talk to the Rebbe or the Manal, It's not necessarily a terrible thing. Back to a child, though, who's resisting going. He decided he's not going, because I don't know exactly what went on over here. I'm just talking about it. I often say that it almost doesn't go by a week, literally, throughout the year, that I don't get a call or somebody doesn't come to me about a child that's not going to school or yeshiva or cheder. Literally, not just in the beginning of the year, not just the end of the year, literally throughout the year. Different ages, different stages, different reasons. Always somebody who doesn't want to go. For one, it's not feeling motivated. For one, it's getting up late. For one, it's hating the teacher, the school, whatever it is. You know, and the question always is, like, what do we do? Do we force or not? Now, forcing a child, especially a child who's struggling, like this child, but in general, forcing a child to go and hoping that, you know, tough love, we're just going to push and you have to, and it's not a question. It would be a shame to have this kid sit in therapy for the rest of his life talking about when his parents forced him to go to school and all the abuse that he went through, whatever is going on in his mind, whatever narrative he's creating about what this force was. You know, it would be a shame. It would be a shame. And it's not going to help him be comfortable either. On the other hand, to make a child too comfortable at home is also a problem. And that's the other side of the mistake, where people go to the extreme. You're going to throw him out of the house and start threatening and screaming and whatever. Or, you know what, stay home, Shefla, I understand you don't want to go to Chedi, you don't want to go, it's such a bad place, right? So we'll make you 3 gourmet meals, and mommy will play with you, and maybe she'll even take a half a day off of work for you, and cancel her appointments and not go shopping. I mean, there's definitely a balance. There has to be a balance. It's very important for children to know that you're not happy that he's staying home. You understand him, you feel for him, especially in this case. Right? You're not just talking about a kid who's just resisting because they decided to. He's not feeling good. He's not feeling good. You understand him, you feel for him, you validate him, you care for him. It breaks your heart that he's not happy in cheder. He's still allowed to know that you're not happy that he's staying home. He's allowed to know that you don't believe it's the right thing to do. He's allowed to know that staying home means that, you know, he might have to be himself at home a little bit, and that he might have to just have some rice cakes and tuna fish, or whatever he can find, some cereal and milk till mommy comes home. Now again, you always have to know, like I started off with, are you dealing with something extraordinary, not the typical, that really does need serious care and help, and make him really understand that you got him because he's never not well, and you want to give him as much as you could because otherwise you don't know, he could have a breakdown, chas v'shalom. Or which ones are the typical kids who are just not going, and they need the push. Now the push doesn't mean to push out the door, but the push means to not make him comfortable enough that will just enable this kind of behavior going forward. So it would be irresponsible for me to be too clear about which direction to take, but in general I think that it's important for children to know when you're not happy they're staying home, and that you're not making them too comfortable at home. And I can say from experience that in most cases, not making a child feel good about or too comfortable about staying home, it usually doesn't take more than a day, 2 or 3, and he goes back to school of cheder. Now obviously you might need some one-on-one guidance how to do it and to do it right, but just think about, like, are you doing either extreme? Because if yeah, that's probably a mistake, even if you think you're getting the results that you want. Now, I don't know, like I said, I don't know too much about this situation. I don't know if this boy does need a different cheder and really that's his problem. Or maybe he just has his depression issues that's gonna go with him wherever he goes. Again, there are both situations. I have seen situations where it seemed almost obvious that a boy would be doing much better in a different school, different moise, different cheder, and the parents didn't want to hear of it. This is where we belong, this is what we do, we don't do that, and whatever. Again, everything just has to be taken into account. I understand that for parents it's not always comfortable to consider all the different options there are. And sometimes we don't want to consider it till it's too late. And I've seen a few such situations, more than a few, where it was pretty obvious to people involved that the boy's not doing well, he's not happy here, he doesn't belong there. That's why he's not happy there. He's not feeling comfortable for a reason. And if he'd be somewhere else, he might be more comfortable. No, he's just saying it, and he just needs help, and we're sending him to someone, and he has to learn to overcome this, and you know that. And I came to a point where the other option, which we were avoiding, isn't an option anymore. I've seen it many times. The other option, plan B, which wasn't really geschmack, and we were trying to avoid it, by the time we realized we can't avoid it anymore, we're on to plan C or D. So it's just something to take into account. There are definitely different models out there. And it's a shame when somebody's resisting something that's really more appropriate and more, tzigapast, and we don't want to acknowledge it. And we'd rather deal with the problem that we're in, right? So this is a big problem. Just last week, I was talking to a few mechanchim, magachirim, barabucher, who really wasn't doing well. And one of them said, this reminds him of the story of Rav Zisha, that Rav Zisha was once stuck in the mud. His wagon got stuck in the mud or something, and he says, Hashem, I understand you made me stuck over here because you want me to do tshiva, but I can't do tshiva in the mud. Get me out and I'll be able to do tshiva. And it was just an idea of sometimes a person's in a place where he turns to Hashem and says, Hashem, I understand your message, but I'm not in the place where I could accept it. Get me out of here and I'll try my best. I think very often, you know, that's what these boys need. A boy sometimes is in a place where he's not doing well, and we're trying to get him to do well, and he can't do well now. We have to get him out of the mud. And, you know, that's always something to consider. So I'm not going to talk too much about that, even though I have more to say about that topic, because I don't know if it's applicable. I'm just mentioning it because if a boy is so unhappy to a point where he hates the boys, hates the school, hates his Rebbe, it has to be taken into consideration if maybe he's right. Not that they're bad, or not that they're causing his issues, but that maybe somewhere else he would do better. If you have reason to believe that he won't, or he doesn't even want to go somewhere else, that's obviously a different issue. Another point is that when there are difficulties, and this is something that I mention it often, whenever there's like a big difficulty, right? I think I said this recently, Rabbi Tursky would tell a story of his grandfather who gave him a brucha before he got married. I actually helped him, you have a lot of small problems, or a lot of problems in your life. He said, well, as I do, what kind of bruch is that? He said, well, when you have a problem that's too big, when you have a big problem, it takes up all the space. There's no little problems anymore, right? When somebody's dealing with a real problem, he only has one, right? When you ask him, what are you davening for? Oh, he's davening for this one thing every day. If you don't have any big problems, then you have a bunch of little ones, then you're good. What happens is often when people are dealing with one big problem, they get distracted, and now everything becomes focused on this one problem. So all your interaction with your son, everything going on at home, it's all about the problem of his depression and his not being happy and not wanting to go to cheder. And sometimes we don't realize how we're obsessing so much on this that we're not leaving room for healthy distraction. I'm not talking about gifts and trips, which is also just obsessing again over the problem, looking for ways to make it better. Just healthy conversation, healthy involvement, being distracted with other things in life. Not everything has to be focused around this one thing. And this is the general rule in life when people are dealing with problems, to try to shift the focus a little bit and create a life around the problem. It shouldn't all be about the problem. So I would hope that, you know, not yourself, we could come up with a way to like somehow shift the focus and the emphasis to not only be on his unhappiness or whatever you want to call it, his social anxiety or whatever else, and make more life around him and with you and everything else. So the short recap is that there are normal situations and there are extreme situations. It's important to know which one you're dealing with to be able to address it responsibly. Even in extreme situations, you want to address the sensitivity, understanding a kid, validating a kid, and boosting him and everything else that I always talk about sensitive children, which I didn't even get to, you know, about really trying to lift him as much as possible, because even if he needs bigger help than that, it's always a big part of it. Forcing a child to go to school or cheder when he doesn't want, or making them too comfortable at home, is usually something to avoid on either end, and slowly, you know, help him do the right thing. And then trying to distract him and you from just seeing this problem all day is also something very big, very important and helpful. And I'll just end off with what we started with. You know, there's definitely situations and people where you can't say whatever you want to say, and you can't just push a kid or tell them the way it is, or help them understand things the right way, because, like we said, you know, dor v'chachom, of part of being the chacham is understanding who you're dealing with and knowing what could be said and what can't be said. And I yourself, with the right amount of feeling, a lot of tefillin, a lot of set d'shmaya, will be able to bring the best out of all our children and see nachas from every one of them.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.